ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to a very, very busy program today. In a moment, I'll be taking you to a major resources conference that's been held in Alice Springs. Meanwhile, in Darwin today,
they were doing the crocodile roll, stirring up the mud crab.
Yeah, there's a crocodile conference on in Darwin. Producer Dan the Man Fitzgerald is there, snapping up all of the juicy crocodile news, so that'll be on your radio before 1:30. And of course, one of the big stories today, the outgoing boss of Woolworths, Brad Berducci, has fronted up to this Senate inquiry into supermarket prices, and, well, it's been fiery.
You're here before a Senate committee today. We're not interested in PR spin. We're not interested in you kind of bullshitting your way through this committee. We are interested in you answering the questions.
Wham, bam, this is all coming up on the Country Hour today. Stick around. Let's go to Alice Springs, where the annual Geoscience Exploration Seminar is on, aka the Ages Conference. So essentially the who's who of the resources sector are in the Alice this week for this conference, and so is our reporter Victoria Ellis. Afternoon, Tori, how's things?
Good afternoon, Matt. Things are going very well here. Everybody's stopped for a bite to eat because it's lunchtime. And outside, it is a beautiful, warm, sunny day. There's a fairly strong breeze blowing. But it's just a great day to be inside discussing all things rocks, because the convention centre is also framed with the beautiful background of the East MacDonald Ranges. So yes. I don't think you could have a more suitable background for a conference like this. This morning, the conference has heard from Minister Mark Monaghan, and he was talking about how much the mining industry contributes to the NT economy, the potential growth for the sector going forward, and he also acknowledged the roles of the MacArthur River Mine and the GEMCO mine on Groote Eylandt in helping the communities there after cyclones earlier this year. And Matt, there's about 330 people here, which I've been told is record numbers. And this year is also the 25th anniversary of the conference. So quite an impressive achievement for something that started 25 years ago to be making it all this way. And lots of mines would have opened and closed and explorations would have happened in that time.
And one man who's seen, I think, all of that unfold is your guest there, Ian Scrimger.
That is exactly right. Dr. Ian Scrimger with the Northern Territory Geological Survey is with me now. Ian, what does the 25-year anniversary mean to you?
Oh, look, I guess we're very excited that the event just keeps going from strength to strength. It started as a very small event, which we held in Darwin for the first time back in 2000, but now it's always held here in Alice Springs. We've got a fantastic client base that love coming back here every year, and it's a great showcase of everything the Territory can offer in the mineral and energy resources sectors.
This morning in your presentation, you said that the Northern Territory is punching above its weight in terms of critical mineral exploration. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. Look, the most recent Australian Bureau of Statistics exploration figures show that the Territory is only second only to WA for the amount of exploration that's going on for critical minerals like lithium, like rare earths, like graphite, all those minerals we need for the energy transition. So, the Territory has about 15 or 16% of Australian exploration, much higher than all the other states except for WA. So it's a fantastic opportunity for the Territory.
What have been some of the key developments since we last spoke at this conference last year?
Well, there's been a lot. In the last year, we've had Australia's largest graphite resource being defined near Pine Creek, and graphite is critical for battery anodes. So that's a really exciting new development. We've had new rare earths resources and vanadium resources defined in the Territory. So what we're seeing is people are out exploring and they are finding things, and this is developing a new pipeline of projects for the Territory.
Yeah, what are some of your projections for the future?
Oh, look, we're quite excited about the potential for a range of commodities. We're seeing a very strong gold price, very strong copper price at the moment, and we expect exploration for those commodities to really ramp up in the next little while, along with uranium as well. While we still hope to see that strong exploration for the critical minerals continuing.
And if we were to be here again next year chatting at this conference, what do you think we might be talking about then?
Oh, look, I hope we're talking about new gold mines starting up around Pine Creek and Tennant Creek. I think there'll be new copper gold resources in the Tennant Creek region to talk about. And there's so much activity for rare earths. I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot more about the potential for rare earths. And hopefully by that stage, Arafura resources being in construction with the fantastic Nolans project, which would be great for Central Australia.
Dr. Ian Scrimmager, thank you so much for joining me on the Country Hour.
A pleasure.
That is Dr. Ian Scrimmager from the Northern Territory Geological Survey, Matt. And it's day one of the annual Geoscience Exploration Seminar today. Of course, it will continue tomorrow. But tomorrow, there'll also be some slightly younger people in attendance here.
With all due respect to Ian. Yes. Yeah.
Of course. These ones will be from in high school age. Ah. And I caught up with Catherine Tilmouth, who told me a little bit more about what's going to happen there.
Yes, it's quite exciting. We've got over 60 high school students coming in to have a look and to learn about what career opportunities there are in earth sciences. So we've got a lot of projects, as we know, in the pipeline for the Northern Territory in mining and gas. And so we're letting all of the kids that might be thinking about their opportunities when they leave school maybe look at a career in something that is local that is going to help the territory grow and benefit and see all the exciting things that they could do as a job when they leave school.
What do you think is the current knowledge of high school students about careers within the mining industry?
Look, sometimes we're fighting a bit of a battle against some misinformation that that mining is over or that it's an old and redundant industry. But as we know, mining is going to be so important for the clean energy future. You know, all of those minerals that you have for solar panels or for electric vehicles or even the minerals that you need to build a mobile phone, that's all going to come from mining. And the Northern Territory has such a rich resource underground of all of those critical minerals that we need for those things. So letting them know that mining is still very strong in the Northern Territory and that there are real opportunities to work local, to explore the Northern Territory and to get good long-lasting jobs right here in the Territory.
What sort of roles do you think the industry is particularly needing more people who are skilled and able to work in?
Look, across the board, there's a bit of a skill shortage in the Northern Territory, but what we're focusing on is anything to do with earth sciences. So geologists, anything to do with environmental science. We've got projects that might be looking at rehabilitation in the future, and you're going to need some environmental scientists and some geologists to look at exploration for any new projects. So those sorts of things. There's a broad range of opportunities available for children for school leavers to look at in the future.
What do you think would be appealing to young people about a career in this industry?
For the resources industry or for earth sciences, you're able to work anywhere and you're able to, if they are a local Centralian family, you're able to stay close to home. There are opportunities here. There are opportunities for them to get a good job and a job that pays well and is long-lasting and close to home.
That is Catherine Tilmouth, who is the Chief Executive of the Minerals Council's NT branch, speaking to Victoria Ellis, who is at the AGES conference on today in Alice Springs. According to the Territory Government, in 2023, the NT's mining sector provided 3,500 direct jobs and generated over $4 billion for the NT economy. On the text line this afternoon, which is 0487 991057, someone here says, so we're hedging our future energy supply on rare earths. Just by the nature of the name says that there's not much of it. Brilliant, says someone here on 0487 991057. 105.7. It's a busy day in the Territory. The Ages Conference is on in Alice Springs. Later on in the program, we'll be heading to an international crocodile conference, which has been held in downtown Darwin.
If your brain is hungry for insights, the ABC Listen app has a feast of podcasts. Try The Minefield.
Today we're going for the problem of evil.
Injustice and evil, if they're the same thing.
Yeah. You might also like Future Tense.
And there is a sense of privilege in that idea of natural, isn't there? Which can easily be manipulated.
Without a doubt.
Or Dr. Carl.
So you can feel a slight cooling, that's latent heat of vaporisation or something.
Load up a podcast and feed your mind with the ABC Listen app.
It is 20 to 1 and you are tuned into the Country Hour. The Senate inquiry into supermarket prices is drawing to its conclusion. And this week, the heads of Bunnings, Woolworths and Coles have all had to front up and take on questions from senators in Canberra. It's been a bit fiery. It's been a bit interesting. You'll get an insight into what's happening next. Right across the Territory on the ABC, you are tuned into the Country Hour. What a day it has been for the Senate inquiry into supermarket prices. After weeks of hearing plenty of evidence from farmers and consumers who feel Woolies and Coles are price gouging and making insane amounts of money during a cost of living crisis, the heads of the two big supermarkets are today appearing in front of this Senate committee. And it was outgoing Chief Executive of Woolworths, Brad Banducci, who was first up this morning. I listened to most of it today and, well, it was interesting. It was fiery. At times it was really, really tedious. For a summary of what has happened so far, here is Bridget Herman, who's also been following the hearing.
In his opening statement, Brad Banducci said he welcomed the opportunity to appear.
And I hope I can help the committee understand the key drivers behind grocery inflation.
Greens Senator and Committee Chair Nick McKim outlined the evidence already heard by the committee, which is examining grocery prices and the power and influence of the supermarkets.
With all the evidence that we've received, how can you possibly deny that you are using your market dominance to do over farmers, to do over workers, and to price gouge your shoppers?
Senator, as per our submission and my introductory comments, we disagree with that position.
Mr. Banducci denied the supermarket had been price gouging, but when it came to discussing the company's return on equity figures, the exchange got heated.
I'm asking you about return on equity. And I want to put this to you. Australia's banks, on average, make a return on equity of about 10%. Australia has the most profitable banking sector in the world. They are rapacious corporations that are making off like bandits, yet your company has a return on equity more than 2.5 times the average of Australia's banks. How can you possibly suggest that that is in the best interests of Australian shoppers when millions of Australians are skipping meals, having to dumpster dive to survive, and are being price gouged by your company?
Senator, with due respect, we look at the return on investment, which is 10%. If you looked at the share market return, it's a 10% return.
Why won't you answer questions about return on equity, Mr. Banducci? It's because you don't like the story they tell. It's because you don't like what they show. That's right, isn't it? I mean, you know, you say you've got no problem understanding my questions, and yet you have repeatedly refused to answer the question here today in front of a Senate inquiry. Why won't you answer the question?
Senator, we focus on
the question is not what you focus
on. Of investment in our business.
The question is not, Mr. Banducci, it's not, the question is not what you focus on. That is not what I am asking you. You can focus on whatever you like for the rest of your life. You're here before a Senate committee today. We're not interested in PR spin. We're not interested in you kind of bullshitting your way through this committee. We are interested in you answering the questions. Would you please answer this very simple question about the fact that your return on equity is more than 2.5 times the return on equity made by Australian banks, which are the most profitable banking corporations in the world.
Senator, the key metrics that judge returns are return on investment, or we call it return on funds employed, or return in the stock market, whether it's a capital appreciation or a dividend.
After a short break, the questioning returned to the issue of return on equity figures, but it didn't last long.
We're back in session in the Senate Select Committee on Supermarket Prices. Mr. Banducci, further to the advice I gave you just prior to the break, which is that it is open to the Senate to hold a witness in contempt for refusing to answer a legitimate question. I also feel compelled to advise you that a person failing to comply with a lawful order of a committee may be found, as I've said, to be in contempt of the Senate, and that in accordance with Section 7 of the Parliamentary Privileges Act 1987, subject to a penalty of up to 6 months' imprisonment or a fine of not exceeding $5,000. I want to make sure you're aware of those matters before we proceed any further. So in the light of that advice, can I just ask you again whether you accept that return on equity is an accepted measure of assessing a company's profitability?
Senator, we measure return on investment, which we think is the right way of measuring profitability in a company. You put a dollar in, and what return do you get out?
Last chance, Mr. Banducci. Do you accept that return on equity is an accepted measure of the financial profitability of a company?
Senator, we measure return on investment. We think that is the right way to measure profitability in the grocery sector. I'm not commenting on financial services. I'm commenting on the sector that I operate in.
All right, the hearing is suspended. The committee will have a short private meeting.
Leah Weckert from Coles will appear later today.
That's Bridget Herman giving us a summary of what's unfolding today in this Senate inquiry. The Q&A with Woolworths boss, Brad Banducci, that has now wrapped up. And Mr. Banducci has been reminded that any questions taken on notice need to be returned by April 23. The head of Coles is now being questioned. And I see she was no doubt listening in, surely. And she's been quick to say that Coles' return on equity sits at 31%. You can follow the Senate inquiry as it happens via the ABC News website. The business team are doing a live blog of the event. Very interesting, very fiery at times. Meanwhile, Bunnings has also fronted up to this Senate inquiry into supermarket prices. Its chief executive actually did not show up for it. Instead, Bunnings put up two other representatives to take on questions from the senators. Bunnings has defended the way it deals with its garden plant suppliers and continues to say that its market share is much smaller than what's being claimed by Australia's nursery sector. Here's Emily Doak with the details.
Bunnings executives told the Senate committee that out of the 1,200-odd nurseries in Australia, it buys from 220 plant suppliers and that it values those relationships highly. Senator Nick McKim put the concerns raised about Bunnings' purchasing practices to the chain's ethical sourcing manager, Laura Gaspert.
The committee's heard quite a bit of evidence from suppliers of plants to Bunnings that's been very negative towards Bunnings. We've heard words to the effect that Bunnings treats suppliers like slaves and like numbers, not people. Given the risk to people for coming out and making those allegations publicly, do you think those are reasonable allegations in the context of how Bunnings treats its suppliers? Like, what's your response to those allegations?
I think both my colleague and myself shared a level of disappointment to hear about those supplier experiences. That absolutely has been my experience working for Bunnings. I've been with Bunnings for 5 years and I lead a team that engage directly with suppliers, and we have many channels that our suppliers can raise concerns.
Bunnings Greenlife category manager Belinda Rakers told the committee it provides weekly updates to suppliers about product performance, which helps guide their growing practices.
the trading terms doesn't outline any commitment of plants to be purchasing. But what we do with the suppliers is to provide all suppliers with weekly sell-through of those products in stores. But the information that is provided to our suppliers helps them plan and forecast their growing.
Ms. Rake has told the committee that Bunnings only provides guarantees on orders when suppliers ask for it. And she said because supply agreements aren't exclusive, nurseries are free to sell to other retailers. Senator McKim asked about market share.
Look, just to be clear, even on your evidence about 25% of market share, that's not much short of the market share of either Coles or Woolworths, just so that we're clear here. I don't know what the market share is that you have. I hear your evidence, but that's a significant share of the market. And for some growers, you would make up a far greater percentage of what they provide into the sector. So wouldn't it be fair on your growers to include in your supplier agreements a commitment to purchase a certain amount of plants for them? Wouldn't that help with the viability of the sector?
Senator, we feel that the information that we provide weekly provides our suppliers with complete visibility of how their products are performing in the stores.
But Senator Ross Cadell wasn't happy with those responses.
I'm not hearing a lot of facts. I'm hearing a lot of opinions, a lot of very clever words. We've got you rely on, we feel, we all take contracted but nothing's contracted, the customer-led offer, which basically means risk-free for you because you're telling them what the customers want, you're going to hold no stock. I'm even worse. I used the phrase the other day that your supply agreements look like nailing jelly to the wall for all the effective that is. So let's get some facts. You have 220 suppliers. How many of those supply agreements have minimum order requirements for delivery?
Senator, I don't have any of that information in front of me at the moment. Our supplier trading terms are reviewed annually.
I don't want to know if they're annual. I don't want to know that. I want to know how many have minimum order requirements.
Sorry, Senator, I don't have that.
Okay.
Could I ask, please, that you take that question on notice and come back to the committee?
So there you go. The senators there, Nick McKim and also New South Wales Senator Ross Cadell, ending that report by Emily Doak. As we've heard on the Country Hour before, the nursery industry of Australia is calling for Bunnings to be included in the Food and Grocery Code of Conduct and for the code to be mandatory. That's what the nursery sector wants. Bunnings yesterday argued that the code is designed for supermarkets and is not fit for purpose for a DIY retailer. Senator Ross Cadell was not impressed with that answer and challenged Bunnings on that point. Let's have a listen.
You say that you're a DIY big box store and the grocery code shouldn't apply. What DIY am I doing if I buy Pedigree dog food?
Senator, we are looking from a ranging lens on how we work in this. We are looking at how customers evolve and how our expectations and our range has evolved over time. Customers have been coming to us for quite some time buying a lot of different pet products.
So aren't plants under the definition of grocery codes a grocery?
Laura?
I believe that's correct. Yes,
that's correct. Okay, so we don't want to be part of the grocery food and grocery code, even though a lot of what we sell are groceries. Isn't that just because you don't want to be bound by the conditions of it?
No, Senator, absolutely not. We're committed to working with our suppliers to have strong relationships. As I've explained,
this is the eighth time I've heard it. Of every person that's come here, Woolworths and Coles, people are hating them. I've had people who supply them come and say good things. No one has heard anything good about Bunnings in the Green Life Supply. All the people who've come to you, that's great, because we're told, smile to survive. People have said that they'll say nice things to you because they want to keep contracts. Why are no one coming to us and saying you are good corporate citizens?
Senator, that hasn't been our experience. I've been working for Bunnings for 5 years. So reflecting on that experience, we work incredibly hard to have strong relationships with our suppliers that are built on respect.
Okay. What's the average markup you put on goods in your Green Life sector?
Senator, with regards to that, it's extremely diverse from products from trees and shrubs to gifting and...
That's why an average isn't diverse. An average is a figure.
Yep, we work with each supplier individually. The retail is actually set by the market.
We are lowest prices.
I have never heard anyone give less answers than you in the last half an hour. You take it on notice or you give an opinion. I'm asking for a number. I hear lowest prices are only the beginning because the rest of the story is a bit of a horror story so far from what I hear.
That is Senator Ross Cadell at this Senate inquiry into supermarket prices. It is nearing its conclusion. The heads of Coles, Woolworths, Bunnings all copping a grilling. My question to you, country, our audience, do you think all of this will lead to anything? 0487 99 1057 is our text number at the Country Hour if you'd like to join the conversation.
Hello, my name is Jihan Abdullani and I am a PhD student for growing Australian native rice, and you're listening to Country Hour.
Matt Brand with you this afternoon. In a moment, we'll be heading to an international crocodile conference that's been held in Darwin. And we're also hearing from you this afternoon on 0487 99 1057. Just before the 1 o'clock news, you were getting an insight into this Senate inquiry into supermarket prices and hearing some of the chief executives of Coles, Woolworths and Bunnings absolutely copying it from senators.
You're here before a Senate committee today. We're not interested in PR spin. We're not interested in you kind of bullshitting your way through this committee. We are interested in you answering the questions.
Now, the question I've posed to you this afternoon is there's lots going on here. Plenty of big words. A lot of fire, but will it amount to anything? Will it actually bring on any change whatsoever? What do you think? Tim in Inverell Bay says, Matt, these inquiries might not come to anything, but it is fun to hear the chief executives of these monoliths getting their asses kicked, says Tim. And Bart says the grocery inquiry will lead to naught for the consumer, just as the $275 reduction in energy prices and the Stage 3 tax cuts will remain as legislated were all lies. It's just all bulldust, reckons Bart this afternoon. And I've got a question here from Ron in Fenny Bay. Afternoon, Ron. Ron says, Matt, would it be possible to get an update on what's happened after the release of the ladybirds at the Esplanade that were supposed to go and fight the papaya mealybugs? If successful, how can the public get their hands on some, says Ron. It's a very good question, Ron. I've sent your text straight to the Department of Industry to say, hey, do you have an update on what these ladybirds are doing? Are they having a win out there on the fringe of pennies? And if so, can you come onto the Country Hour and tell us all about it? So I've sent that off, Ron. We might get a response tomorrow, perhaps. I do see in the news a group over at Mandora have got together and are looking to crowdfund to be able to get hold of as many ladybirds as possible to put on trees over in Mandora to fight this mealybug. So I've got a little bit of audio here from the founder of the group, Jackie Ryan, says they're all chipping in there at Mandora. They're crowdfunding and they're hoping to go and buy ladybirds and get them working ASAP.
I had a friend that works in biosecurity and she mentioned it on a Facebook page and a little while ago, and I thought, oh, we should look into that. And it kind of just started talking to people about it, and it kind of just snowballed from that. But we're looking at ladybirds and larvae as well. So, yeah, you can purchase them through the post.
So there you go. People over in Mandora are crowdfunding to try and buy up as many ladybirds as possible. Ron, if you are listening, there are a couple of companies in Australia. Their business models are breeding up these beneficial insects like this mealybug destroyer of a ladybird. So there are companies out there breeding them up so they can be purchased. We'll hopefully get an update from the department on how they're going very, very soon. Thank you very much for your text. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Billy Lynch is there this afternoon. Billy, have you been noticing this papaya mealybug at your place?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've got quite a few frangipanis where I live, and they're all, Struggle Street.
I think once you've seen it and you're aware of the story, you can't stop seeing it as you drive around Darwin. It's just really noticeable. The frangipanis in particular.
Absolutely, yeah. A pawpaw plant as well. It kind of got hit and it just kind of, I don't know, disintegrated. It didn't survive.
Yeah, they don't do well at all. As the name of the pest suggests, papaya mealybug. They love the papaya, the pawpaws. So anyway, these ladybirds, hopefully they can do the job.
Yeah.
Weather-wise, let's maybe start up in the northeast corner. A little bit of rain around Gove this afternoon.
Yeah, it's been a very wet day across the northeast today. We've seen probably 40 millimetres or so today. So there's been, I think it was about 12 mils up to 9 a.m. and then we've had another 33 or so since 9 a.m. This is at Gove Airport. And the radar's very busy. It's mainly showers, but there's a few thunderstorms in it as well. And all that humidity is sort of spreading westwards across the Arnhem District with these kind of quite humid east to southeasterly winds. So the showers spreading, they've nearly got to Owenpelly, so they are spreading across to the western Arnhem District at the moment. And we're also just seeing that the cloud build up around Katherine and across parts of the Daly District as well, in association with that humidity too. So that's probably the main thing that's happening across the top end
just
this week, Matt.
A little bit of life in the wet season yet.
Most definitely. Yeah. Actually, seeing we're talking about the life of the wet season, I will just use that to mention that there's still a bit of life in the cyclone season as well. So we are just sort of monitoring things, and there is a chance that a tropical low may develop later in the week around the Northern Territory as well. So, so we're just, we've got a low risk of that becoming anything significant, but it's not a zero risk. So we're still, got to remember that the dry season's not here yet, and there is still the risk of a late season tropical cyclone.
Yeah, be looking green around Gove. Another 33 millimetres in the gauge this morning. They've been having a good week or so. Can I ask what the afternoon's going to be like for the Douglas Daly region? And I ask that because there's a field day on there this afternoon. Lots of farmers standing around in the open checking out some cotton crops. Is it comfortable conditions to be, perving on some cotton?
Well, yeah, I mean, the cloud's starting to build up. We've got a weather station at Douglas River Research Farm. So it's reporting 34 degrees at the moment. Humidity's about 45%. We've got sort of east-southeasterlies around 15 to 20 k's per hour. So, I'd say it's a little warm and humid, but better the now and rather than a month ago where it would have been a lot more humid.
Yep. And for Central Australia and the Barkly, what can you tell people?
Well, it's a very stable weather pattern there this week. It's just a big high-pressure system south of the Bight. So we've got these dry southeasterlies. That high is going to be in that area all week. So no change to the weather forecast. Sunny conditions. Yeah, no chance of any rain. And, as usual, getting quite breezy, particularly through the Barkly District.
The Barkly breeze is whooping up, yep. All righty then, thanks so much for your time, Billy. Really appreciate it.
No worries, thank you, mate.
It is 13 past one and you are tuned into the Country Hour. We've been hearing from this Senate inquiry into supermarket prices, senators grilling the heads of Woolworths, Coles, Bunnings. I've put the question to you, will this amount to anything? It's, as Tim says, kind of fun to hear the chief executives getting their bums kicked, but will it actually bring about any change whatsoever? On the text line, Dave in Palmerston says, nothing will change with Coles and Woolworths after the heat is gone. After a while, they'll be back to their usual bad practices, reckons Dave. And another text here says, Matt, I reckon the next thing about the supermarket inquiry will be some senators going on fact-finding missions overseas to see how other countries stop duopolies in food supply. And I agree with your other listeners that this inquiry is likely to have zero outcomes for farmers and consumers. What a shame, says someone here on 0487 99 1057. We're off to a crocodile conference next.
Hello, my name is Saloidi Botongoleoi, and I am from Crocodile Island Rangers, one of the women coordinators. And you are listening to the Country Hour.
Yep, there's an international crocodile conference being held in Darwin this week. Our very own Dan the Man Fitzgerald is there this afternoon, snapping up all of the news. Afternoon, Dan. What's going on?
Yeah, Matt, I'm down here at the Crocodile Specialist Group's 27th working meeting. It's a conference that's all about crocodile management. There's people here from all over the world, really. Researchers from across Australia, Southeast Asia, South America. There's even some Indigenous rangers in from Arnhem Land. A few people who work on crocodile farms as well. I've bumped into somebody who's from Zimbabwe. There's some people from alligator farms in the US due to give speeches later in the week. And I'm here with the co-chair of the Crocodile Specialist Group, Charlie Manolis, who's been a crocodile researcher for decades. Charlie, tell us what this conference is all about.
Well, this is our biennial meeting of the Crocodile Specialist Group. We have quite a long history of over 50 years of establishment of this group. And despite advances that we've all made with Zoom and other communications platforms, nothing beats being able to bring people together face-to-face, talk about their work, exchange ideas, and really advance the whole conservation of crocodilians and management of crocodilians around the world.
Yeah, and as I said, I've met people from all over the place for a few hours this morning. What are some things that people from all over the world have in common when they're talking about managing crocodiles?
I think probably the most common thing that we all share is a lot of people are often frightened of crocodiles. You know, they're predators, especially saltwater crocodiles in our Australian and Oceania region, Southeast Asia. And so, you know, sometimes conservation leads to more crocodiles, you know, being recovered, and that's great. However, it also means often that there's more conflict with crocodilians, you know, where people are subject to attack, livestock taken. So that's often a key element that people have to deal with, you know, this human-crocodile conflict. But otherwise, look, we're all, in this group at least, aspiring to assist conservation of crocodilians, whether they're commercial species, non-commercial species, small ones, big ones, the works. And every country has its own characteristics that you have to work with, but we all understand that we can all share ideas and experiences to improve everywhere.
The recovery of the Northern Territory's crocodile population since the end of hunting back in the 70s has been a real success story. What can other countries learn from the Northern Territories?
Well, I think our experience is quite important, and really, yeah, we have. We've brought our crocodile population, salties, back from almost none, back to pristine levels, what was here when white people arrived. And that's a huge, huge success story. But the way we've done that, the way we've integrated public education, our problem crocodile program, monitoring, a research component, you know, all of these elements have all assisted the overall management plan. And as I said during the meeting, often people walk in and they see a program and they think, oh, this is fantastic, without really realising the effort, the number of people and everything that's been done in the 30 or 40 years leading up to that marvellous program that we're looking at. And so, yeah, people can learn that, you know, the research elements, things that have not worked, are often just as important as things that do work that they may be able to apply in their situations back home.
What are the main threats to crocodile conservation?
Really, the biggest for most countries is habitat loss. If you don't have habitat, you lose not only crocodilians, you lose other species that are associated with those habitats. So really, habitat loss is quite significant in some places. Human population pressure, just urbanisation moving into crocodile habitats. Illegal hunting is not so much of an issue now, as most trade is very, very legal. But again, every place is a little bit different. So our ability to recover salties, for example, in places like Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia, there's just not the habitat there, and there's just people everywhere. So what we might be able to achieve in the Northern Territory with our low population base and pristine habitats may not be possible in those countries.
And here in the Northern Territory, the NT government is currently reviewing its management of crocodiles. The Chief Minister, Eva Lawler, thinks there's too many. What do you think?
Well, I think if it's a tricky question, yeah. And for a lot of people, well, let me go back a step. I think the big success for the NT program has been that we have made crocodiles valuable in some way to the community, whether it's through the industry, whether it's through tourism. At least people can see crocs as paying their way. They're not on the negative side. I mean, if you ask my wife, she'd probably say, yeah, there's probably too many of them, you know. But, everyone has a view. You don't have to like crocodiles, but I think if you can make them valuable in some way, then at least your conservation efforts stand a chance of getting through. But it's, you've just got to be always working, towards, assisting for public safety, informing the public what's going on, being realistic about management actions, and moving ahead. And I think that's what the NT is doing.
And speaking of making crocodiles valuable, there are a few croc farmers in the room here today. As far as the Northern Territory's industry is going, where is it at the moment? Is it in a good place?
It is. And although our farming industry here is relatively small by world standards, because there's other species that are farmed in much, much greater numbers than us, but we've got the best skin in the world. And so in terms of market share for saltwater crocodile, which is the species that the fashion houses really want, we're in a good place. Yeah, and having good management, having a good management program, having a government that is supportive, also makes the market feel just a lot more secure about working with you.
Just lastly, Charlie, earlier this morning, Dr. Graham Webb was honoured. He was the chair of the Crocodile Specialist Group for 20 years. What's his contribution to this group been?
Graham, I've worked with Graham for 45 years now, and really I don't know that anyone within the crocodile sort of world has probably contributed more, whether it be to biology, to management, to biopolitics, to just the whole wildlife conservation as a whole, than Graham. And the fact that he's, we're here in Darwin, in the Northern Territory, really tells you that, the contribution that he has made is always associated with the Northern Territory, because this is where we've done it and he's done it. He deserves all the accolades that he can get, certainly.
Yeah, and there was a standing ovation there in the room for him, so it feels like the love for Graham Webb was worldwide.
Oh, global. Yeah, and really his impact, and no one's worked more closely than Graham than myself. Really, it's a global impact. It's not, and having him in front really helps to put the NT on the map as well, because that's where that expertise is always linked back to the Northern Territory. So it's a great thing for the NT. It's a great thing for our crocodile management, and he's been a fantastic resource for us and other people all around the world for, 20 years as the chair of the CSG and another 20 or 30 years as a researcher. So huge contribution, huge.
Charlie Manolis, thanks for your time on the Country Hour.
My pleasure.
There you go, Matt. That is Charlie Manolis. He's a crocodile researcher and he's also the co-chair of the Crocodile Specialist Group, which, is having its conference all this week here in Darwin.
And congratulations to Professor Graham Webb. It sounds like it's lunchtime there, Dan. Are they serving up crocodile?
Are they serving up crocodile? I haven't taken a look at the menu. Charlie's still with us. Is there crocodile on the menu?
I hope so.
Sure. We'll have to go and look.
A little crocodile burger, something. And, Dan, here's a challenge for you. Can you please go and try and interview a gator farmer from America?
I will for sure, Matt. I'll be trying my hardest.
I'll let you go. Thanks for your time.
Cheers.
G'day, it's Trent here from Catherine, and I'm here feeding Old Mate the crocodile. Yes, Old Mate is actually his name. He's 2.4 metres, and he's a saltwater crocodile. You wouldn't want to meet one of these fellas late at night. Take it easy. You're listening to The Country Hour.
Our text number, The Country Hour, 0487 991 057, just on our coverage of the supermarket price inquiry today. Jerry says, I wonder if the Coles Woolies inquiry will look at how big companies buy shelf space so that there is less room for smaller suppliers and therefore less variety for consumers. Also, when veggies are on special, who reduces the price, the grower or Coles? When I supplied capsicums years ago, I had to reduce my price, not Coles. It made them look good, but it was very hard for me to make a profit, and that needs to change, says Jerry. Now, just before we go to the Roma sale yards for the weekly cattle market report here on the Country Hour, how's this? Australian lamb producers have this week been caught up in the Israel-Iran conflict. Prices fell 20 to 40 bucks a head for lighter lambs at the Bendigo sale yards yesterday, and processor Midfield Meats reports that it had some flights of product on its way to the Middle East, but turned around. Warwick Long's just had a chat to market analyst Olivia Agar to find out what's been going on.
The MLA Bendigo sale yard report showed that it really was a demand issue that was impacting the Monday market, with their reports that air freight into the Middle East has been disrupted by the latest Iran and Israel conflict. So in particular, they saw lighter weight, so the bag lamb market was $20 to $40 per head cheaper, and that some of the regular processing orders weren't operating.
Oh, there's a lot to unpack there. Can we start with the bag lamb market? What's the bag lamb market?
So it's the full, you know, the full lamb that typically heads towards the Middle East. And we really saw, you know, that market take off late last year. So if you look, you know, at the 3 months to date, even we've seen 23,000 tonnes of lamb exported from Australia to the Middle East for those first 3 months of this year. And compared to last year, that same period, we sent about 11,000 tonnes. So, you know, we've seen huge growth in that Middle Eastern market, and they really are a price market. The decline in value of lambs we saw over last year in particular really opened up the affordability of that product to the Middle Eastern market. So we've seen that since 2022, the Middle Eastern market share of Australian lambs grown from 13% to 20.6% last year, and then 27% for the first 3 months of 2024. So a really strong and important market for us at this time.
And when we say bag lamb, so it literally is a lighter carcass, sort of, you know, 18 kilos or less lamb, and the whole carcass is bagged and flown on a plane to the Middle East, and that's literally the market.
That's right. Yeah, that lighter sort of 18 to 19 kilo range is what suits that market and what they're after.
So the rockets fired and the drones fired from Iran towards Israel grounded a lot of flights in that area, and that's effectively ground that market to a halt for Australian producers. Is that what is being reflected through the sale yards?
It did temporarily. So Israel was forced to shut down their airspace for both domestic and international routes entirely on Saturday, and then they reopened it on Sunday morning. And the risk to aircraft in that region, it meant that Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon all chose to close their skies for that period, but they're all reopened their airspace now. So when that happened, you know, there are at least a dozen airlines that had to cancel or reroute their flights earlier in the week. But you know, Qatar, Emirates, a lot of them have managed to, you know, resume their suspended services and once the airspace began to reopen. But, you know, there are still warnings in place that there will be some flow-on impacts of the cancelled flights and disruption. But we should see that market return now that flights are moving through those areas again.
That is Olivia Agar from Nutrien Ag explaining why prices just fell off a cliff there at the Bendigo sale yards.
It is time for us to head to Roma now to find out the latest in the cattle market, and it's been a very big yard in. Here's David Friend.
With roads drying out and the backlog of cattle, Roma agents yarded 9,190 head, 5,500 more than the previous sale. Cattle were drawn from a large supply area of Queensland as well as Western New South Wales. The market showed price fluctuations due to quality. At the time of this interim report, lightweight yearling steers to restockers were 10 cents better and selling to 424 cents a kilo. Yearling steers 280 to 330 kilos sold firm and sold from 298 to 406. Medium weight steers to restockers attracted stronger competition than the feeder lines. A small number of grown bullocks to 284, young bulls under 450 kilos to 312 cents a kilo. This has been David Friend from the National Livestock Reporting Service.
Thank you for that, David. In the live export trade, from what I can tell, there are three live export ships due out of Darwin Port over the next 7 days. So the trade humming along fairly nicely. That wraps up a busy country hour today. I hope you've enjoyed it. Keep it rural.